welcome to We Cut Heads, a Spike Lee podcast. I'm your host, Spencer, and with me is Joel. There's no really crazy stuff with this movie, so you're Joel.
Yeah, what are you going to say? like a local doctor who's known for philandering, but is also seems to be a good father, and or is he? None of that's true. My name is just Joel, and you've heard my voice here probably on podcast. Unless you're just like an Yves Bayou super fan.
I'm sure they exist.
Of course.
I thought this was a bigger movie, but more I looked online, it's kind of not as big a movie as I assumed it was. But anyways, this episode is the special one for August. It's Yves Bayou, Casey Lemon's debut feature film. And to talk about it, we have special guest Bowen North.
Oh, I'm special. I will have you know that I was a Yves Bayou super fan. I saw this movie a lot in my teen years, which is why I think Spencer asked me to come on and talk about it. So thank you. It was a lot of fun to get to watch it again for this.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, I like to get someone who's either a fan or knows something about the subject, but
definitely more of a fan. I am a very white woman, so I might not be the best voice for this particular episode, but I was a huge fan of this movie when it came out and saw it many, many times, so I can speak to that at length.
Okay. I mean, for He Got Game, we had a white guy on to talk about that, and it turned out fine.
Well, good. Just don't judge me too harshly.
No, but so you actually saw us in the theater and all that?
No, actually, I saw it. I rented it from our local video store, and I rented it many, many times. It was just a movie that, like, I don't know, every weekend I would go to the video store in my hometown and check out a bunch of movies, and this one kind of always made it to the pile. So I'm from a very small town. We didn't have like a movie theater, and the one like closest to us, it did not show like these more like kind of artsy small budget movies with like an independent director. No, you wouldn't get stuff like that.
I can relate. I live in an area like that. There's one art house theater that has one room and it's maybe 12 seats.
Oh man.
And it's like usually documentaries or a Green Book.
Oh no.
But this is a movie I first heard of, I think it was when the documentary on black horror.
Horror Noir.
Horror Noir, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I first heard about it from that documentary, and I had seen Casey Lemons and other stuff. Like, before she wrote and directed Yves Bayou, she was in a movie that I know you love, Silence of the Lambs.
Yes.
And A Hard Target, she's in, and the Spike Lee movie, School Days, like, she's in Candyman. Mm-hmm. Like, she had a really interesting, brief acting career, and that kind of turned to directing.
Yeah. I think when I went to see the movie Hannibal in the theater, I was very upset that we didn't have any Ardelia. That was before I realized there were so many other reasons to be upset by that movie. None of them were that Casey Lemons was not in it. But yeah, I'm actually really glad that she decided to get behind the camera, because as I said, like, this was one of my favorite movies when I was, you know, a teenager. So she's made some really interesting, like, it was an interesting turn from actor to director. And I think it doesn't always come out this well. I don't know, like, how much, as far as her, like, financial success, I can't speak, but I feel like she's made some, like, really good film that I would want to rewatch.
Yeah, she hasn't made too many movies, unfortunately. She has Harriet coming out this year, I think.
That's kind of surprising. Yeah.
And, besides that, it's, Talk to Me, the Don Cheadle movie. From like I was in high school at the time, so like 2006 or 7, there was Black Nativity, which I barely heard about, and Caveman's Valentine, which I never heard of until I did research for this. And that's kind of it, but it's not surprising because, you know, filmmaking is kind of a boys' club.
Yeah.
It turns out.
Yeah, you know that cafeteria table meme that was going around? There was, like, only yeah. one director, and it was Sofia Coppola, a female director. And I was just like, come on, we can do better than this.
Yeah. When I saw that she was the director of Views by You, I was like, oh, it's the lady from Candyman. So I don't know what that says about me. But for some reason, like, I knew her specifically from Candyman, and I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I can't remember if she actually shows up in horror noir, but I know it's she is discussed a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, that's a great documentary for anyone that hasn't seen it.
Yeah, and it starts with Birth of a Nation, and they talk about Spencer Williams, who was an early black director, like kind of one of the first successful, commercially successful
mm-hmm.
black directors. And he's kind of forgotten because he's on Amos and Andy in the 50s, which I understand why he's forgotten, mm-hmm. but... You know, he did interesting stuff, and they talk about, anyway, horror noir. I think it's a Shudder exclusive.
Yeah.
And it might be other places. But, Joel, had you heard of Eve's by You before? I told you we were doing this episode.
Yes, I'd heard of it before. It's not something I had watched. I feel like it was something my parents were talking about. I don't know. It had buzz in the 90s when it came out, and it was like, oh, have you seen Eve's by You? That's pretty good. You know, that's a good movie. That's an interesting movie or something like that. Like, I feel like I had the same kind of buzz that Good Will Hunting had mm-hmm. when I was in high school, where it was like, oh, have you seen Good Will Hunting? This is interesting. Like, oh, you should see that. But I don't know if this won any awards or something like that. But I've known just the title Eve's by You, I think is like already... like sparks somebody's curiosity, like, oh, what's that all about? But I didn't know anything about the plot or anything mm-hmm. like that, so
there was a lot I had actually forgotten, even like despite how many times I've seen this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, I had forgotten that Eve herself has this sort of touch, you know, this sort of gift that her aunt also has. I'd forgotten, like, mm-hmm. rewatching it, like, that Debbie Morgan's character is actually like Samuel L. Jackson's sister and not Lynn Whitfield's sister. Like, there was lots of like little tiny details that I've forgotten, but I think the reason that I saw this movie and that I liked this movie so much and just kept renting it again and again is because, okay, bear with me, but it reminded me a lot mm-hmm. of this other movie that came out in the 90s that did a good job of capturing like that coming of age for a young girl experience, and that movie was My Girl. So I know they
the Bees.
Yes, the Bees. Okay. So like on the surface they have nothing in common, but they both like really managed to capture like this very like tender age for a little girl, and also like Eve is a middle child and she acts like a middle child through the whole movie, and my mother's a middle child, so there was something in that that I just really, like, latched on to.
Huh. Yeah, watching this, I was surprised that Megan Good plays the older sister,
mm-hmm.
and I mainly know her from Cousin Skeeter on Nickelodeon, like, as a late 90s, I was, like, 8 or 7 or 8
mm-hmm.
and I thought she was just like a TV person, and seeing her in a movie actually acting is like, holy shit, she could act from the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, now she's in like Tyler Perry stuff, which is good, but yeah, you know.
Hey, she's a working
That's
actress.
Right.
Yeah, she's a working actress.
I had seen her in something before this that she had starred in, but it's not off the top of my head, I don't really remember.
She's in Brick, the Rian Johnson movie.
That, yeah.
Playing a very similar character.
Yeah.
But, and Eve herself is in the I didn't write down her name. She's in an upcoming Birds of Prey movie. The Harley Quinn thing.
Mm-hmm.
That? Yeah, and she's also Jussie Smollett's sister.
Yeah.
And the little brother is another Smollett, Jake.
Journey Smollett Bell. Yeah, she's been in a lot of stuff. Like, she showed up in... she even showed up in True Blood once, I think. I think she did an episode of House that I remember very well. She did, like, some Grey's Anatomy, Friday Night Lights. She's done, like, a lot of TV acting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I recognized... when I looked her up on IMDb, I was like, I've definitely seen this actress before, but I didn't realize she started so young. She's one of those, yeah, like you're saying, she's just one of those people who shows up on an episode of a series for maybe two at the most, but usually just one, you know.
Yeah, I have not seen the Underground television show, which I think is supposed to be about Underground Railroad. I have not seen it, just, I don't think I get that channel. I love Aldous Hodges in it, so I'm amazed that I haven't seen it. But I think she's a series regular on that show.
Hmm. Yeah, but this child performance, I don't know about you, Joel, but it seems like we've been getting, like, the movies we covered, we're centered on child, like, it seems like a good streak of, like, oh, these are great kid actors. We just did Rosetta, and the Swedish immigrant movie.
Yes, yeah, I think we have been. I have such problems with children and child actors for the most part. So I'm like, thank God. I think the worst child quote unquote actor that we've seen was in Shakespeare in Love. You know, the boy that's like. I saw her boobies. Oh, yeah. You know, like, okay, get out of here, kid.
I forgot we even covered that movie already.
Oh, yeah.
Bo, do you have, you're a Shakespeare person. Do you have any opinions on Shakespeare in Love?
I do, actually. Like, I think that it's kind of, I think it's clever. I think it's a clever movie. There are things I really like about it. Like, sort of the poke at Hollywood culture that goes on in that movie is kind of amusing. You know, like, you have, like, the gondola driver that's like, aren't you that actor? You know, it's like the LA, like, the taxi driver trying to give you his script kind of thing. I think that it's a cute movie. Like, did it change my life? No, but I enjoy it. I love chick flicks. I'm unapologetic about liking rom-coms, and that's just one that I happen to like.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we have to evolve from that culture of, like, there are certain things where you should feel ashamed and some things you should anyways.
If your listeners probably don't know, but I write romance novels, so this is, like, well-trod ground for me. Those are bad, and you should feel bad for reading them.
Yeah, that's not
well, I have a t-shirt that says that, but I guess I'll get rid of that now.
I've read a few, but... well, yours, but they've been very good.
Thank you.
I don't read trash like that. I just read novelizations of movies.
Sir, I am an award-winning author.
Oh, God. Showed up again on my own podcast.
I mean, I'm fine. Go ahead. I'm sorry. This isn't my show, so you guys go for it.
Oh, no worries. What makes this movie unique, I think, would be good to talk about. Like, you were comparing it to coming of age films. This is maybe come off as a completely stupid thought that I was watching it, it was like, this is like a super dark version of To Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh, I was thinking
no lawyer
that too.
But
yeah.
Like, there is a certain level of danger in, like, these people's upbringings and stuff like that. But we do get a lot of their adult lives, too. Mm-hmm. So, I don't even know. But I think the more interesting part is, about Eve and her experiences. We get a lot of the sister, and her. I don't know. Some of that stuff I felt like was interesting. Some of it I was like, which side? Where are we going here? This is a little melodramatic, but what, you know?
Well, Casey Lemons did really have a background, I believe, in soap operas before she started like film acting. So I believe she used to write for soap operas. So like that, you do see that melodramatic kind of streak really at play in this film.
Yeah, it fits into like a you know, steamy Southern Gothic kind of thing perfectly fine.
It's
too.
A Southern Gothic I don't hate. Like, as a Southerner, most Southerners will tell you immediately that we hate Southern Gothic. It's like a terror because it's always like just white people acting horribly. So we really just, I'm not a fan of the Southern Gothic genre overall. But I really liked this movie, and I did have that thought, like, this is a Southern Gothic film that is not insufferable.
Have you seen Daughters of Dust?
I don't think so.
It's the first theatrical release film by a black woman, 92. And it's also it's set in the Gullah Islands, and it's kind of reminiscent of this a little bit.
Yeah, I actually had a teacher in college that was Gullah. And he spoke the language and everything.
But Beyonce borrows some elements of Daughters of Dust for, I think it was Lemonade. And I think she worked with a cinematographer on that too. But like, I don't know. Like, I got some Daughters of the Dust vibes from this too, Troll.
What was it?
I got some vibes of Daughters of the Dust with this, with like the setting of like the, like the swamps and this kind of separate black community.
The cinematography was definitely as gorgeous as Daughters of the Dust, I'd say, but it was a little more polished. Like this, where Daughters of the Dust feels kind of like an art movie.
I mean, it is an art movie.
I mean, it's still, but it's still a narrative. Like it has a you know, a plot going on, a first, second, third act kind of thing. But this one definitely feels like, I'm really glad you said that thing about Casey Lemons doing the soap opera thing, because this feels like a chapter in like an ongoing soap that would be going on. But like, not in a, you know, once again, I probably shouldn't even say this, but like a negative association with soap operas. Like, enjoy what you're going to enjoy, it's fine. And like, it's just polished and feels Hollywood, but not in the way that Spike Lee's movies sometimes feel Hollywood. It still feels kind of independent.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's a movie about black women mainly, and it's kind of like, well, Hollywood still kind of is slowly coming to terms with that.
Not just that, I think, but like upper to middle class black women. I think that's an important distinction too, because we're looking at people that already have like this comfortable life. I mean, at the time, I'm sure there were lots of things about being a middle class, upper to middle class black woman in Louisiana in the 50s and 60s that definitely probably sucked. But it is nice to have like this portrayal of this family that's not just like, you know, constant suffering and misery.
Yeah, like there's never a point where there's like they worry about money. Like class is kind of a factor, but ultimately not really.
I mean, she had $20 to give to that whatever that lady was. Yeah. So, you know, that's some rich people money right there.
Yeah, I wouldn't turn my nose down to up at $20 right now.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, and this gets into like voodoo and like the Southern folklore stuff, and I guess like Cajun folklore, not Cajun, but like I was reading an interview and she talked about like the everyday like supernatural Southern beliefs, and like it mixes that, and it's just really cool to see like voodoo not being seen as like this, being treated as like this force of evil. It's kind of like, I mean, yeah, they're voodoo does exist in this, but in a more
like a more restrained portrayal.
They were,
yeah,
they were playing that lady as an evil witch, though.
I actually see her as they were portraying her as more of a con artist than anything. Like, that's right. Just the way the whole thing is, like, towards the end, it's like, did this happen because Eve paid for this spell? Or did this happen because he was a philanderer and pushed his luck one time too many? So right. It's just like, I see her as being a total con artist, but that's just, you know, what I walked away from. That's how I choose to see it.
So, do you two think that the supernatural elements were real in this with the aunt, with like having visions of people's lives, or do you think it was not real?
Yeah, I don't have any reason to doubt that she didn't have powers or anything like that. We didn't see her necessarily. I mean, there was one lady that I feel like she probably was conning, and the lady that was like, she was like, put this thing and put the bag next to your skin, and her niece was like, does that work? She's like, I don't know, or something like that. I can't remember. But I think the vision part, it seems at least she's incredibly sincere about it, and people seem to believe she can.
I think that the point of most, like, of those practitioners, like, the biggest point of it is belief and willpower. So if you believe, then there's no reason to say she can't do it.
Yeah, that's true.
As far as whether or not I thought it was real or not, I mean, like, the South is a pretty spooky place overall, so I'm skeptical, but open to the idea that it was real.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of took at face value that, like, at least some of it was real for the aunt, and some of it was this kind of bullshit just like to make money. And I took it as like Eve was kind of like developing her powers, and like because the only real adult she ever seems to enjoy being around is her aunt. And so maybe it's just kind of her forcing herself to be like, oh, I'm just like her because I have like these types of powers too. Or it could be, you know, she actually does. So it's kind of like this whole push and pull throughout the whole movie of like, is this just because she's a child she believes this or not? I don't know.
I mean, plenty of adult people get, you know, pulled into this way of thinking too. So who's to say?
That's true. I mean, it's easier to like buy into it in this movie because it is a child. It's her perspective, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there are things that seem like big coincidences if she doesn't. Like the whole envisioning a child being hit by a bus thing, and then that ends up happening, although it's not the children she thinks it is. That was a weird scene where everybody's kind of celebrating, like, oh, thank God, our kids. You know that kid is still dead, right? Oh, but it's not her.
That's why I love the grandma. She cracked me up. She's the one that stands around and just dispenses like threats and common sense.
Grandma's got her shit together.
And going back to like the spirituality aspect, like her dad, played by Samuel Jackson, who also was a producer on this, he's a doctor, and like you have this clash of like spirituality versus like quote-unquote real medicine kind of going on. It's a little subtle, not too developed, but it's interesting to show, to see like the, you know, one adult in her life is very like practical like medicine, and the other one is more you know, like voodoo and
a little out there.
Yeah, a little out there,
more spiritually based.
Yeah, I mean, that was an interesting balance that they struck between the two parents. Even though, like, the rational parent is not the one that always acts rationally.
Yeah. So, So, like, I guess, like, the basic story is this, like, it's just, like, one really hot summer in, like, 1962, and Eve, quote-unquote, killed her dad, mm-hmm. and it's just all leading up to her dad being killed. And when the movie first started, I thought it was going to, like, cut to her in prison, like, for her last segment. Because the way, like, the narration happened, I was like, oh, I guess this is, like, going to cut to, like, the 1980s or some mm-hmm. shit. And then it's like, oh, it's really just, like, the, like, To Kill a Mockingbird. Just yeah. this
These are her last thoughts right before she gets the electric chair. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's just, like, I like to think it's her, like, wondering, like, talking this out to, like, maybe she's saying this in therapy. Like, I think I might have killed my dad. The therapist is like, no, honey. Yep. Your dad was a serial philanderer. This was gonna happen.
Yeah. So, I mean, he got killed by that guy who's been appearing in every other movie we've watched.
Oh, seriously?
So you need to watch out.
Oh, Roger Grevier Smith.
So he's like your Andrew Keenan. My other podcast is we watch, like, modern adaptations of classic films or classic works. And we're doing mm-hmm. Shakespeare right now, and, like, every other movie we've watched has got Andrew Keegan, who a lot of people know from American Pie, and having a kombucha cult. like, he has been in everything we've watched, and it's getting really spooky. We're like,
weird.
Stop following us. We don't want your kombucha.
Yeah, show up, open your front door one day, and there's just going to be a single bottle with a note on it that says, I'm watching.
You've been watching me, but I've been watching you.
I guess for us, it'll be like tickets to Roger Greer Smith's newest play on Broadway.
Oh, yeah. That's cool.
He's going to have a revival of the Rodney King thing he's been doing.
Yeah, he did it. Yeah, I think he's an L.A. guy. I'm out here on Unspooled.
Oh, me and Josh Hollis can go hang out with him.
Yeah, like on Unspooled, they're talking about, like, he does a lot of theater stuff in L.A. too.
Mm-hmm. All right.
But he plays the guy who actually kills the dad, and I don't. I think you only see him in the beginning and the end because he's.
You see him in the middle too. That part where she's
at the market. Yeah.
Yeah, when she's first looking for the lady to go buy what she thinks is going to be a voodoo doll. And he's like, hey, whatever. What is the nickname they have for Red? Yeah. Or something like that? Yeah. I really liked everybody's, like, red-tinted hair in this. Just as a side note.
I think it, like, and spoke well. I'm sorry, Spencer. I keep interrupting you.
No, it's fine.
I think it speaks well to the area, because there are, you will see, like, a lot of people with, like, light skin and red hair in that part of Louisiana.
Mm.
Sorry, my cats are going
cousins.
Crazy. Stop it.
That's fine. I have a few cousins who are light skinned and they have red hair. It's a thing. Like, you don't see too much with black people, but it does happen.
Yeah, it's cool. Like, it's probably like a sun bleach thing too, from where they're living.
Yeah.
Oh, and Malcolm X was a redhead too.
Especially after he put the stuff in there. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, hang on, Tom. Stop.
That cat is so
stop
angry.
It.
I've got opinions.
God, you're such an asshole. Sorry, guys. He normally... No, I can't lie. He does this every freaking time. Stop it! Come here, please stop meowing. Alright, I think he'll be good now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Our cat Coco will just... on the other podcast, I have a different setup where we have hand microphones, and she'll just jump on your lap and start rubbing her face on the mic, like, oh, yeah, yeah. Like, cut it out!
Tom, stop.
I know, Tom, I know. Used by You is pretty good.
Yeah.
He did seem to enjoy it when I watched it the other night.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, he has pretty good taste in film.
Oh, yeah. He's a connoisseur.
let's see.
Can I just a second talk about the cast of this movie?
Oh, yeah, I want to get to that. It's
this
a pretty good
cast is so good. Like, even past the child actors, Lynn Whitfield, amazing. Debbie Morgan, amazing. Samuel L. Jackson, Diane Carroll. Oh, my gosh. I know I'm forgetting. So, Vonnie Curtis Hall. So good. Like, this cast could not have been more stacked.
Yeah, Vonnie is also Casey's husband.
That's her husband, and she still put him in that wig. Of course, I was speaking with my Megan Sunday, who I think has been on your show before, maybe.
She might for Halloween, potentially.
Yeah, she and I were talking about that, and she was like, "You know, why would you do that?" And I said, "Well, if my husband was acting up against Debbie Morgan, I might be inclined to make him look as unattractive as possible, too." But no, Vonnie Curtis Hall, incredibly attractive man in a terrible wig through this whole movie. It's so bad.
Yeah, and he's also a writer-director. I think he's a writer, too. But he also has directed some stuff. And,
yeah, he's directed episodes of Serenity, which was weird. Or Firefly is what I'm thinking of.
Oh, Annie.
Wait, I think I just... you guys are talking about the guy who had the long, long, like, silver hair.
Yes, Julian Gray Raven.
That guy was amazing.
Oh, he's so good. He's so good in everything.
I was like, where did you come from, guy? Come
on
to my house.
Daredevil. He's a black Ben Urich.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know the actor. I was like, who is this African-American, Native American guy coming in here? What's his story? Let's follow him.
And he
I like his jeans.
Also, Julian Gray Raven. I mean, that is a name straight out of romance. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it seems a little too much for a movie. I felt out of place. But he directed Glitter, the infamous Mariah Carey movie.
Yes, he did.
Oh, best movie ever.
I've seen it.
But I'm sure it wasn't his fault though.
Why aren't we covering Glitter?
Well, if you want to do a Vonnie Curtis Hall episode, we can cover that.
All right. I got to go.
To Amazon.
you knew this guy was something special because this is the second... what is her character's name? Moselle, right?
Moselle.
The second Moselle touches his hand, she immediately envisions hot sex. So, you know...
I mean, it happens. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
No, he's a beautiful artist who is looking for his wife. Unfortunate, but yeah.
Yeah. And that's like a Tommy Wiseau wig. It just makes me think of The Room. It's so ridiculous.
No. Yeah, it's very, like, gray, and it's just scraggly, and it's just hanging everywhere. But he pulls it back sometimes and wears, like, has, like, the one earring. It's fine. It's whatever.
He has a habit of picking up people. Doesn't he pick up a couple of people?
He picks up children a lot, I feel like.
Okay, yeah. Just children. Like, yeah, you look like a strapping young man. Pick up this kid.
I mean, that is the best way to remove them from an area. It's just pick them up. Because they're small. They're small.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Portable.
Compact.
Yeah. Joel, I don't know about you, but I kind of got a Rashomon vibe a little bit.
Especially with that thing that happens, which I would love to discuss that part, because...
Yeah, it's kind of like, I guess it's like the big tipping point for the movie of, like, the family drama in particular.
Sure, with Cecily, right. the oldest daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, the thing that finally drives Eve to murder.
Mm-hmm. Murder.
Yeah, leading up to it, Samuel Jackson is sleeping around. He He's
basically never home, so his children adore him, but he's never around.
Yeah. Well, there's a particular closeness, I feel like, between him and the eldest daughter, and there's a lot of tension in that relationship, and I feel like it is kind of a thing that a lot of, like, young women experience when they get older, sort of, like, their father is, like, the only man that they really know and see, and they're sort of already, like, their brain is, like, forming the kind of people that they're going to be interested in later in life, and so there is, like, this weird, like, tension there between the eldest daughter and the dad, but it just gets, like, at times increasingly uncomfortable, and she's older, and she's trying to be, like, independent and trying to be, you know, a very elegant older girl, like, her, you know, she gets the same hairdo as her mom, it's a big thing.
Yep.
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, and like the like, you know, like he and the oldest daughter have like a different connection early on, when it's like in the first 10 minutes when at a party,
mm-hmm.
He chooses to dance with her in front of everyone instead of Eve.
Mm-hmm.
And so like from the get-go, it's like, okay, this will be like a thing with like her older sister. You're not really sure where it's going to go exactly.
And they're setting up that Eve is very much like the odd man out in the middle child, because her mom like scoops up her little brother and is like, oh, my baby, and is kind of like nuzzling her little brother, and like her dad is off dancing with her older sister, so Eve is just there sort of with nobody.
Yeah, and she kind of sees her dad with another woman.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't know how old she is supposed to be, like maybe 10, 9 or 10. I can't remember. She might have say.
Are we talking about Eve?
Yeah, Eve. Does she say how old she is?
Let's see what good old Wicked.
It's like 8 or 9. I mean, she doesn't seem quite preteen yet.
Yeah, but she is still young enough that she doesn't get
she's 10.
What's going on? 10.
Yeah.
But she still doesn't understand what's going on between her dad and this other woman, and it's kind of like that moment when you realize when your parents are just people. Also,
horrible moment.
Which I can remember. It wasn't like that for me, but it's kind of like, oh, my dad's just a person and my mom's just a person, and they really don't know the answers.
Mm-hmm.
They're just people, and like the whole movie is kind of like her coming to the conclusion of, oh, they're not these like I don't know, like you know what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, they're not these larger than life archetypes. They're just people.
I mean, she's seen like a flaw in a couple of the systems, you know, of these things. But I still think all the children still have this like, these people are so high above us here as our parents, mm-hmm. kind of thing. Like, they are these. Even though I said they've seen the flaws in the character, they're flawless characters. Like, this is my father. Like, even though I saw that, it's not going to change the way that I see him necessarily. And then like as the movie goes on, some bigger things may or may not come to a head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so at some point early on, it's kind of the mom finds out what's happening, even though I kind of suspect she had an idea of what's happening.
Oh, and she totally knew.
Yeah.
And this isn't the first time they've had these big yelling fights, I guarantee it.
Yeah. Yeah, this reminds me of losing
because
this kind of reminds me of losing ground a little bit too, of like the husband who was kind of shitty. Although in
for
losing
sure,
ground
for sure.
He's notably shittier than this. At least I think so.
Because when Eve tells her sister what she saw at the party, she doesn't explain it like, I didn't know, like, it wasn't like a full, I didn't know what they were doing. Like, she understood something was going on that shouldn't have been going on. And, like, maybe she wasn't the one Like, she probably hadn't ever, like, directly caught him doing something like that before, but this is something that's been floating around the house. Like, dad's doing things, possibly with ladies, he shouldn't be doing because they're not mom. Yeah.
No, I think in Cicely's eyes, it's because, like, it's like a betrayal of her as well.
Oh, yeah, probably, because, like, they seem the closest people in the whole, like, in the house, like, it's, like, they seem, like, to be the closest relatives, like, in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
And all that builds when the mom kind of, Roselle, or?
Moselle.
The mom, what's her name? Moselle was the aunt. The mom is Roz something.
Yeah, Roz.
And she kind of had enough of it. They had a huge fight. And then Cicely tries to kiss her dad, or he tries to kiss Cicely. And it's kind of up in the air for the whole time. And it's unclear of, like, who made the move, and, like, the whole, it doesn't go, like, full, what I'm trying to get at.
No, what are you getting at? What I do?
No.
It's sort of the he said, she said, who's right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it goes, I mean, that plays back into the part in the beginning where Cicely was like, this is what you actually saw, you know, rewriting the memory of seeing her father with the other woman. It's like, no, it wasn't anything untoward. It was them laughing or, you know, spilling something. I can't even remember.
That is definitely and how I spilled it.
Her story, like. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and this is, like, in her mind, did she rewrite it, or was she telling the truth? Was her father writing the... I mean, he wrote that letter. Did he know he was going to die? Or he just wanted to have this ready? Like, I'm not sure.
You know, that's something I never even considered before, because apparently, you know, his sister came at him with all these accusations. So I'm kind of, like, wondering if it is, like, a family thing, if it is, like, this sort of sixth sense is passed down through this family, if maybe he had a touch of it too.
Yeah, maybe, because, like, it kind of would make sense of him, like, rejecting it, because he seemed to be very focused on, like, like, what is practical, because he's a doctor, and that kind of, like, informs, like, okay, he's more grounded and real, and he kind of is dismissive towards his sister. Although, like, you know,
he says she's unfamiliar with the inside of a mental hospital, which I was like, damn, dude. Rude.
Yeah, which kind of... yeah, kind of a dig only, like, a sibling could make.
Yeah. I mean, if I had three husbands that had died... one after another, I would probably need to be in one too.
Yeah. I would also definitely believe I was cursed and probably not sleep with that very handsome, long-haired man.
We'll sleep with him, sure, but marry him, no.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, just make him sign a waiver.
I am not responsible for... I mean, when that part when they're sitting on the bench and he's like, I still have to go find my wife. Like, oh, okay, well, no, I have to find her so I can divorce her and marry you. Like, wait, what? Hit the brakes.
We just met.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that sex was real good, but come on. Anyways, what are your guys's... I mean, do you have... What do you think, actually? Do either of you have, like, a firm belief one way or the other?
Uh, Yeah, I don't think there's enough evidence to show, well, what really happened. Is this one of those, you know, mysterious things? Is this, like, Eve wasn't there, so, like, we really don't know what exactly happened.
I mean, whatever it was it was clearly enough to traumatize her older sister in such a way that, like, she felt like she had to actually leave. So even if, like, his version of events is the true version of events, like, it was still, obviously, he didn't handle it in the best way, and, like, he's even saying, like, I should have done this, I should have done that, and I should have done this. But that girl was traumatized from it. So to me, in my eyes, it really doesn't matter, like, who was correct or whose version of events was the true one, because the result was kind of the same either way. Like, that girl came out of it with some issues.
Yeah. I that's basically how I feel about it too. But yeah, I mean, I would obviously, in a real life situation, I would lean with believing the girl. I mean, he got shot. What are we gonna do?
I mean, what did you think, Spencer? You tended to believe her version of events, or
kind of what Joel said. I kind of side with, like, what you were saying. It's like, well, it clearly traumatized her, so it
doesn't really matter.
It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
And yeah, either version of the story would traumatize a person. So it makes sense.
Yeah, and I guess, like, that would lead him to, like, trying to get back to normalcy of some kind. So, of course, he'd go back to his side woman.
Yeah.
But then that kind of, well, I don't know, I see, like, the end of his death being, like, being caused by him because he was sleeping with a married woman whose husband was away, and eventually he was going to figure out what was going to happen. Like, it's only a matter of time.
Yeah.
I mean, a couple of things, but, like, Eve is not,
I mean, Eve,
not partially responsible for getting Roger Smith's ire up. Like, if they hadn't had that encounter where she was basically like, yeah, my dad's spending a lot of time with your wife. A lot. You know what I mean? She's like winking
I mean,
at him.
And I actually have to wonder if that's what she means by the summer I killed my father. Is like, that is literally the moment that you did that. Not when you gave $20 to this voodoo lady.
Right.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Yeah, but, like,
would
Roz have put her, like, finally, like, managed to put her foot down enough to where he stopped seeing her? You know, there's, like, a thousand, like, variables in between, like, the husband finding out. Because he seemed pretty freaking clueless when Eve dropped that. Like, everybody in town already knew, but he had no idea.
Mm. Yeah, that is true. He kind of was like a Dale Gribble.
Mm-hmm.
If, and also Samuel L. Jackson's character, if he, like, he's calling him out, like, you've got this superiority thing going on right there, and, like, literally, like, all you have to do is not talk to my wife again. But Samuel, when he says that, you know, good night to her, he knows exactly what he's doing. Like, I'm gonna have the last word, because you know what, it's not a big deal, and I'm going to show it, and this is what's going to happen. Because what's he going to do? Shoot me?
Right.
No. Anyway. I would have shot him, is what I'm saying. Anyway.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah, you know he's going to die at the end, but, like, I like that shot of him on, front, the character's name, but Roger, like, in like, the big hat, like, on a railroad, walk in, you see a shadow, and it's like, oh,
yep,
death is coming.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, specter of death.
And, like, at first I thought that was Julian Gray Raven going somewhere, but it's like, oh no, it's kind of like, I think that was meant to be a trick, because I think he shows up in a similar outfit and you kind of don't see him fully at first.
Oh, yeah, it's a twist. It turns out he's a hired killer. That's the whole reason he was in town.
Quite the twist.
Wow. So many layers.
But, you know, I mean, like it's meant to look like, well, that could be Julian, or it could be someone else. And
yeah.
It's kind of like,
they did
kind
of bury the lead with that one, yeah.
Aside from, like, all that stuff, I did really enjoy this, like the siblings playing with each other. And like this old, like, quote unquote old fashioned summer, where it's like they have, what are they, like, they're, and like they read all of Shakespeare, or like all the tragedies,
yeah,
and then move on to the comedies.
Like, these kids are way better read than I was at that age. I think I was reading Sweet Valley High and Nancy Drew when I was 10, so yeah.
I've been reading, like,
I had not gotten to the tragedies yet.
I was reading what my sister stopped reading, so I just got the leftover books of whatever she read.
Sure.
Yeah, I was reading Choose Your Own Adventures, and I, you know, I could never get the good ending. I'm still angry.
I don't know. We kind of covered most of it. Like, this is a really good movie.
Yeah.
I think it should be more seen. I thought it had a higher profile, but it kind of doesn't even have that. Like, Roger Ebert was a huge fan of it, and at Ebert Fest a couple years ago, they showed it. And, like, there seems to be, like, a cult around this movie, but... Mm-hmm.
I wonder if there's been any, like, good release of the movie, because, like, if there was a nice Blu-ray with, like, commentary and maybe some interviews with the cast now or something like that, that, like, I think that would go a long way to getting it back in people's minds.
Yeah.
This movie actually reminds me a lot of another movie from the 90s, also starring Vonnie Curtis Hall, as it happens. Have you, either of you seen, from 1992, I think, Passion Fish?
No.
So this is, Alfre Woodard and Mary McDonald. Mary McDonald is a soap opera star, lives in New York and gets hit by a taxi cab and is paralyzed from the waist down, and she moves back home to Louisiana. And Alfre Woodard is kind of like this, nurse that's trying to get, you know, she ends up coming to work for her, and they develop this really special, like, bond, this really great relationship. But she, you know, she has her own story separate from Mary McDonald, but it's also set in Louisiana, and it's very, like, it doesn't quite have the supernatural vibe that this one does, but it's a movie that I feel like is often very overlooked, and people have forgotten even existed.
John Sayles movie.
Yeah,
that's
it's
cool.
John Sayles. Angela Bassett's in it. Like I said, aforementioned Vonnie Curtis Hall. Oh gosh, what is his name? David Strathairn is in it. Yeah.
I gotta check that out.
Yeah, I actually think you would. I would like to hear your thoughts on it, Spencer.
Okay.
I've added it to my watch list.
Yeah, Passion Fish from 92.
Yeah.
But, a couple more things. When Aunt Moselle is telling her tragedy of her past husband, it's done as
love
and
that
it's really
scene.
And like I was looking up like how it was done, and it was just done with like a camera and the actors and just like pulling focus and like, you know, like and shit, and it's done in the most simple way, and like just knowing the right camera angles to hit so you're not in the same shot.
That's even more impressive because it's such an affecting scene.
Yeah, like describing it won't do it justice, but like you get to see like the ghost of the past come to life, and like it seems like has this weird vibe of, is Eve imagining it? Like, because of the way it's being told, or is she actually seeing, like, the ghost of the past? And it ties into, like, the supernatural, like, whether or not it's real or not, like, tone of it. And it's just this really amazing scene. I think it's, I don't think it's one shot, but it's like, but it's a lot of long takes.
Mm. Yeah, it's a beautiful scene. I think, like, I just remember, like, holding my breath through the whole thing, watching it this last time through, like, because I'd forgotten this scene entirely, but it's so beautifully done, and to know that it's all done with these, like, practical techniques is even more impressive.
Yeah. Oh, and the cinematographer, I should mention, is Amy Vincent. She's one of the few, like, prominent female cinematographers.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think she might have retired, maybe, because her last movie she did was the Seth MacFarlane Western comedy from, like, at this point, 5 years ago.
Oh, I don't even remember that.
And she has no other movies, so I think she may have retired or switched her TV or something.
Mm.
But, yeah, and it's... what else? Oh, and Aunt Moselle... It's kind of like a Greek
mythical chorus.
Like, yeah, and also, like, she kind of has the vibe of, like, I think is it Cassandra,
mm-hmm.
the one who, like, has, like, the tragic irony with her power, and, like, it kind of felt like a nod to Greek mythology a bit in a lot of ways with her.
Cassandra from Wayne's World.
Yes.
I was thinking Cassandra from Assassin's Creed Odyssey, my favorite game. Now,
no, see, haven't played that yet.
It's not $20 yet, so I haven't gotten it yet.
It's very good. But definitely play Cassandra anyway. Yes. I can see that her having, like, that sort of the tragic irony in her whole story, because she always finding love. She has no problem finding love, but then she loses it just as quickly, too.
Yeah, I'm looking.
Yeah.
Who else? Oh, the music is by Spike's go-to guy, Terrence Blanchard. Well, now he's his go-to guy. It was his dad before, but then he and his dad kind of aren't friendly.
Mm.
They haven't been friendly for a while, apparently. But Terrence Blanchard, it was my favorite film composers. And his score towards the end is fucking incredible.
Yeah.
Like I said, people saw it, because if I heard about it before I was into movies, people must have seen it. I don't know how that works. That's the way I feel about things. Like, when I remember when I was younger, it's like, if I remember somebody talking about that movie, it must have been slightly popular, because I didn't know anybody who just watched obscure things at all.
And the Library of Congress has added it to the National Film Registry.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah. Although, I didn't hear much about it last year when they added it, so, again, I don't understand why this isn't, like, really still talked about at all. But, but Casey's...
Did you guys both watch this on Amazon, by the way?
I did, yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I just, I was looking at the IMDb trivia, and it says that the director apparently didn't do the editing herself for the theatrical version, and there was, like, a whole character and plot line that was taken out. And there's actually a director's cut DVD. I wonder what is actually on there.
I mean, I couldn't say, because I feel like the only version I've ever seen is the theatrical release. I mean, I'm sure that's what they had on VHS in 1997, so that's what I've seen.
Yeah.
Interesting, though. I might. Yes. This movie is worth buying, I feel like. If you know, it's worth owning a DVD copy of it.
Yeah,
I feel it would reward rewatches, mm-hmm. too, because I'm just discussing this with you guys. I'm thinking of these things where it's like, oh, of course. Like, I'm so dumb. I didn't think about the Shakespeare tragedy part. Like, oh, of course.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's got that, too. Yeah, well, Shakespeare, if you've heard of Shakespeare Love episode, my Shakespeare knowledge is basically zero.
Oh, you should be listening to this season of Excessively Diverted, where we're covering Shakespeare.
I listened to a bit, but I think he took a break or something. Mm-hmm. But like the Clueless bunch, when you did Clueless, like whenever, like that whole batch.
Oh yeah, anyways, the Austin batch.
Yeah. Although that's not Shakespeare. Again, I'm stupid. I don't know Shakespeare very well. Besides, like the two famous plays, but East Bayou was originally a novel, but Casey realized she can't really write a novel, and it kind of turned into she realized, oh, the structure of this novel is kind of like a screenplay, and so she kind of changed it into that.
Very so cool. Wait,
which
that's cool if you have the ability to do that.
Yeah. So. Yeah, this is available for streaming a bunch of places. They're DVD. And former guest Gina Radcliffe wrote a review of this in, I think, May or April. I forgot when, for The Spool, which I didn't read until I watched the movie because I wanted to go in fresh eyes. I will link to that.
She really has, like, a great eye for this stuff, and I love Gina's takes on things, so anything she writes, I'm going to agree that everyone should read it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank goodness for The Spool for giving her that, like,
a little bit
extra voice and platform. Yeah, exactly, because I'm really enjoying her stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think as of today, or yesterday, just did a review anniversary for Sixth Sense.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was today or yesterday. Anyway, so, yeah. So, other movies came out in 1997.
And... No.
Okay. This movie... but,
That's why it made money. It was the only movie that came out.
Yeah, but other movies came out. At least one we're going to do a feature episode on... I don't know when exactly. Jackie Brown. I have to kind of nail down a time with the guest.
Kind of looking at the list of movies that came out in 97, it's kind of blowing my mind, like, how many, the range of different, like, level of quality and level of things I remember.
Yeah.
Bo, would you like to go first?
Well, Jackie Brown was on my list, because it's such... an iconic movie from the 90s and such an amazing performance from Pam Grier, from Samuel L. Jackson, like all around amazing movie.
Robert Forster
is so good in that movie.
Yeah.
So some of my other ones, The Game, obviously I am a big fan of Fincher, and The Game is a classic favorite. My husband had never seen it, and we just watched it a few months ago. And at first was very, he's always very skeptical when I show him, you know, stuff that he should know and doesn't. But he loved it, freaking loved it. So that's definitely one of mine. Yeah. Like, I don't love all Fincher, but the ones of his that I do love, I love a lot. Like, Zodiac is in my top five. I've seen it. You know how some people have, like, a comfort food movie? Like, they'll come home and watch a rom-com. Usually, like, if I'm having a bad day, I'll come home and put on Zodiac. I don't know what's wrong with me. So,
See, I wish Sarah was here. She's probably seen that movie, like, three times, and she just discovered it, I think, earlier this year. So.
It's so good.
Yeah, it is
but
great.
But my other one... Okay. I'm prepared to defend this movie. I love this movie. It's very stupid. It came out in 1997, but Trey Parker and Matt Stone's Orgasmo, a movie I've seen maybe as many times as I've seen Eve's Bayou. Yeah.
No, I like their live action movies. I have never seen that one. And I've only seen the TV cut. But Basketball, I've seen so many times.
Yeah.
That movie's so good.
I actually like Orgasmo a little more than Basketball. Just because it's a lot more... It's more over the top and ridiculous, if you can believe it. I mean, there's a guy that wears a dildo on his head through the whole movie. And it, like, kind of flops and sways around every time he runs, and it's hilarious. But it's also like, it's kind of one of those rare movies that came out in the 90s that was not only like, it was sex positive, but also like kind of treated people that work in the sex industry as human beings a little bit. There are some like very cringy jokes and things that happen in it, but and I like anything that makes fun of Mormons, so I was all the way down for it.
I mean, Matt and Trey love Mormons.
Yeah. I think they used to be. I don't know if they still are.
Oh, but I know, like, they have a real fascination with Mormons. Because mm-hmm. there's the classic Mormon South Park, which is kind of the view that I still find funny.
Yeah. I mean, they're...
Well, not to mention the Book of Mormon.
The Book of Mormon.
Yeah.
I think that they are, like, former Mormons or ex-Mormons, so I'm not entirely sure. They've never confirmed that, but they... well, Trey portrays a Mormon in the movie. Matt portrays a hilarious boom mic operator. So it's a very dumb movie. Don't go into it expecting it to change your life. But if you want to kill a couple hours and laugh at a guy running around with a dildo on his head, it's worth your time.
You heard it here first. Orgasmo, as good as
so
East
I have
by
the
you.
Game, Orgasmo, and then my last one was Oscar and Lucinda. Just because it's Kate Blanchett and Ralph Fiennes at their most, like, at their peak beauty, playing gamblers in the 18th century. So, yeah, those are my three sons from 1997.
All right.
Cool.
Yeah, for me, I'll try to keep it brief. Spice World, I watched it with my cousins. I think they bought it, and I really enjoyed it, even though like it was a quote unquote girl movie, and
it's
I was like
fun.
That movie's dumb. But I was 8. I really liked it, but but I didn't want to say I liked it in front of my cousins because I thought they'd make fun of me. But Aww. They kind of didn't care. I have not seen it since then, but I do have fond memories.
You should
of
rewatch
that.
It. It totally holds up.
All right. At some point, I will. Tomorrow Never Dies, my favorite of the Pierce Brosnan ones. It's stupid the way I like my James Bond movies. And I like Pierce. He gets a bad rap, but the scripts for him were never that good. But Tomorrow Never Dies is kind of the good one. And Jonathan Pryce is the villain, and he's great.
He's always great.
Mm-hmm. And the plot of that movie can't happen anymore because technology has kind of taken over the print industry, so it's kind of pointless. it definitely is worth watching for like this dumb plot of like, oh yeah, newspapers used to be a huge thing, now they're kind of not. And the last one is Dakan. It's one of the first African films to deal with LGBTQ characters openly. And it's from the country of Guinea, or I say Guinea, I think it's Guinea, but it was nearly protested to the point where they couldn't complete it. And the director, Mohammed, I should look up his name, I think Mohammed Kabara, has not made another film since this movie, and he only made, I think, 2 short films in this, and that might be it. There's a DVD out there, and it's streaming sometimes, but it's kind of rare. Mohammed Kamara, that's it. And it definitely is worth watching. I saw some reviews of it on Letterboxd, and they call it like the precursor to the movie with Armie Hammer and Timothée Chalamet.
Call Me by Your Name.
Yeah, so they call it like a precursor to that, and it definitely is worth watching, and it's kind of a landmark movie, and it actually is legitimately good, even though it feels like a first movie, and I wish he made more movies, but I kind of understand why he never got that chance again.
Okay, so there is a movie called The Mirror. And there's a bunch of different movies called The Mirror. This one is directed by Jafar Panahi. And I can't really explain why this movie is so interesting, because you need to just watch it kind of blindly. The premise is there's a little girl in Iran. She her mother doesn't pick her up from school. So we watch her as she is trying to get home, and she's asking people, you know, is this, you know, can you help me? And there's, you know, she gets on, tries to get on buses, but they're going, she's not sure if she's going the right direction. And it's like, you know, it, there's something that happens about midway through the movie where you're not sure if you're still watching a movie or if you're watching like a documentary at that point. And that's as much as I will say about it. It's such an interesting twist that like I just blind watch it. Go watch The Mirror, 1997, Jafar Panahi. Let's see. Another one would be Vegas Vacation. No.
A fun fact, my mom has met Wayne Newton because my mom used to be Air Force, and Wayne Newton was like doing torn Air Force bases. And he kissed her on the cheek, and she said he was wearing far too much makeup.
No, I'm not surprised. I mean, the man should be falling apart. Look like. Okay, so I was going to talk about Cure, which is Kiyoshi Kurosawa movie, kind of a psychological thriller, like trying to find a killer. Who leaves a large X in his victims' heads, but the detectives are not having any luck in doing it. And like, I remember liking it a lot, but I don't really remember the details of it, unfortunately. But it is good. I would recommend that. So, I think I'll just go with the movies that we covered on Please Don't Send Me Into Outer Space for the rest here, which for some reason we're prime. I mean, Sarah and Aaron and I grew up in the 90s, so we're prime 90s film lovers. Yeah. 97 was... Yeah, we have six movies from 97 that we covered. There's a crappy made-for-TV movie called The Midas Touch. We do random movies on it. It's just about a kid who, whenever he's touching things, it's the Midas thing. They start to turn to gold. And the wacky adventures that happen with him. It was more fun to watch and make fun of than to actually watch. A Life Less Ordinary.
I love that Danny movie.
Yeah, that's a favorite. I hesitate to recommend it to people because I think you have to have a particular mindset when going into it. Because dealing with the whole... angels of heaven thing while fate is involved, and whether or not you can stand to see Ewan McGregor crying for his life as he's about to be killed a couple of times and stuff like that.
Lots about romance novels in that movie, though.
Yeah. It's like it. breaking with reality while being a complete fantasy at the time. Like, I love it. And, let's see. We covered Anastasia, the animated movie. I'm not going to say anything about that. I happen to know there are a lot of people who really like that movie. I just happen to not like Don Bluth movies. And that's my problem, not anyone else's. I apologize. The Fifth Element. If you don't know about that movie, I don't know what to say. I think most people do. So we'll leave it at that. Gattaca, another one of our favorites here at the house.
I've seen that. That was a homework assignment in high school, so I hated it because it was homework.
Oh, for gym class?
You haven't watched it since, Spencer? I think you should give it another try.
No. The context of this is for homework made me kind of hate it at the time. I'm sure it's better than that.
Yeah, I actually really like that movie.
Yeah, I've got, you know, Spencer, I've got two words that are going to convince you to watch this movie.
Okay.
Ernest Borgnine. No, I'm just kidding. I don't. He is in the movie, but that's such a kind of lo-fi, sci-fi classic in my brain that I feel like if people haven't watched it, I'm like, oh, am I the weird one? I don't.
Ernest Borgnine has a secret to a long life.
Yeah.
Yes, I heard that recording recently. He whispered it to me while I was sleeping. Ah,
well, you I wanted to know.
Oh, no. And last but definitely not least, Event Horizon.
That's so good. So bad, but so
good. I saw that for the first time because of the podcast, and it has become one of my favorites. Paul W.S. Anderson, in my opinion, has not done anything better than this movie, and like the cast is so
well. Hey, Martin Kessler's so going to hear this episode, and he's.
I mean, Resident Evil is good, okay, but like I agree with him on that, but okay. It's not Event Horizon.
Event Horizon is like a favorite of mine. It's Hellraiser in space, and I love it. It's very dumb and. The whole time I'm watching it, I'm like, why do I like this movie? But I don't know. I just can't explain it. I really like that movie.
Everyone takes it so seriously on the thing, but they're also there's also this undeniable camp to everything. Oh, yeah. And like the layout of the space station doesn't make any sense. And Sam Neill just chewing on that scenery.
Oh, that was amazing. Yeah. There was any.
I'm going to go watch it right now.
So good.
Yeah. So that's it for the Please Don't Send Me Outer Space episodes, at least.
Okay.
97 was Bo? Such a good year for movies, because, I mean, you had, like, Titanic and Good Will Hunting, which were huge, like, financial successes, but you also had, like, Boogie Nights and Jackie Brown and L.A. Confidential, like, these movies that were so, like, now they're just so, like, part of pop culture that... You know, might not have had the huge release that, like, Titanic had. Who did? But, you know, it was a really good year for movies.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, we got a whole bunch of pop culture, like, things that I feel like if you grew up in that time, it's like... did you, Con Air? Yeah. Yes. Devil's Advocate? Yeah. Unfortunately. I Know What I Did Last Summer. Come on, guys. Oh. Get away from me.
Lost Highway was out that year. I'm still trying to figure that movie out.
Yeah. So, Bo, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for having me on and letting me interrupt you a lot. It's what I do.
No, it's fine.
Want to plug any stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Or anything
so
like
I have
that?
A couple shows. I've got Excessively Diverted. I mentioned earlier, me and my co-host Sammy C, we watch modern... It has to be a modernization of some kind of work of classic literature. So we did a bunch of Jane Austen stuff at first. Now we're doing Shakespeare. Next we're going to be getting into like more like classic literature that's not sort of under those two authors. But we just watched a really good modern take on Macbeth that's set in like the culinary world around like this three-star restaurant thing, and it was like actually worked really, really well. Like you wouldn't think, but it totally worked. My other show is Let's Get Weirding. It is a Dune podcast, so if you are a fan of Frank Herbert's Dune or not a fan and maybe don't know anything about it or have a lot of problems with it, please join us because we definitely discuss everything that we like about it, all the stuff we don't like about it. Me and Megan Sunday reading Dune chapter by chapter, and we have a new episode every Friday.
Are you going to do the whole Dune series?
Well, the books are big, so right now we're just doing we're doing the first book. Actually this week's episode will be the last chapter in book one, so then we're going to take a little break and have some other stuff before we get back into the second half of Dune. But we will probably do the first four, like the original box set.
Yeah, I understand there's a huge universe with Dune.
It's massive. It's a huge universe, but you spend a lot of time in conference rooms. So.
Oh, fun. And I believe you have some books, too?
Yes, I'm also an author. If you like historical romance, or even if you don't, check out my books. Bo North. My website's Bo North Writes. I'm on Twitter, mostly yelling about things, but please follow me there, and you can find all my stuff on Amazon, iTunes, or iBooks, wherever you buy books.
Yeah, and as someone who has read a couple of his books, I highly recommend them.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, it's kind of my gateway into, like, I guess, romance. Now I'm curious, like, where else to go.
Oh, I'm happy to recommend anyone. If you tell me, like, what your preferences are, what your reading preferences are, tell me, like, the last three or four books that you actually really liked, and I will take that and try to recommend, like, a really good romance novel that you will enjoy.
And it will take me 2 years to get to that book, because I'm a slow reader.
That's the good thing about romance. You can read it really quickly.
Yeah, so, Joel, do you have any upcoming episodes you want to talk about of Don't Send Me Space Pod, Please Don't?
not really. We're kind of like in between schedules here, unfortunately. But that's, you know, there's a whole 150 plus back catalog of junk to listen to if you want to hear me rattling on about science fiction and fantasy movies.
Yeah, I think the most recent was the Don Knotts fish movie.
Yep, The Incredible Mr. Limpet, wherein Don Knotts wants to have sex with a fish so bad he becomes one.
Yeah, I saw a movie as a kid, and I didn't know the name of it until I heard that episode, and I was like, oh, it's that weird movie I saw as a kid.
Also, he kills a bunch of Nazis.
I don't remember that part. I just remember him as a fish.
This all sounds good to me. This is all within my wheelhouse. A horny movie, fish, horny fish, killing Nazis. I like all of these things. Like, I mean, if The Shape of Water had a scene with Sally Hawkins, like, mowing down a bunch of Nazis, it would have been the perfect movie.
Yeah, that's an undisputable statement you just made right there.
For me, I was just on Below Freezing with CJ and Micah talking about Cool World. Yeah, I volunteered for it because I find Bakshi endlessly fascinating, even when it's bad. And this is it, Cool World's a garbage movie, but it's so bizarre and interesting that it kind of has to be seen to be believed if you have not seen it. Like, there's a point where there's a POV shot going from a monster's mouth out his anus. And it's just like, wow, I never thought I'd ever see that in a cartoon. And now I have. But, yeah, so I was just on that. And I'll be on the Grindbend a couple times in the next few months talking about the Disco Godfather and the Sister Street Fighter. And I was on earlier here talking about this weird giallo called In the Folds of the Flesh. That's kind of like this weird melodrama murder mystery thing with incest and Nazis. And it's out of print, so it's hard to find. But listen to the episode, because it's a movie full of twists. And it's hard to understand and explain. And it's more fun to hear about than actually watch it.
Hmm.
This month is the Gunter and Hess month, so the normal episode will be The Sweet Blood Jesus with Marcus Penn, which was recorded in June, and Gunter and Hess, which will be with Melanie. She's someone I know through Twitter who loves that movie, so awesome. Yeah, that's that. And again, thank you for your time, Bo.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Yeah, if you want to come back on, I can send you a list of what's not taken.
Okay.
And yeah, that's it, Joel. Got any last words?
Yes. You shouldn't steal a pineapple, no matter how delicious they are.
Words to live by.
Okay, bye.
The show's email is highandlowpod@gmail.com. It made no sense to change email, so it's the same feed. The show can be found at podbean.com, and Spotify, and other places you can find podcasts. Please rate and review whenever possible. The logo is by Josh Hollis. The music is by James Fell, and thank you for listening.